Chapter 5.
The main barrier to getting the Galactic Alliance to talk sense is Jason Solo. He leads Chief Omis by the nose, and he makes Admiral Neothel worse by encouraging her short, sharp shock tendencies. Get him out of the way, and things would calm down enough for us to maneuver around Omis. I think I'll have a statesman-to-statesman chat with him. Privately.
Der Gedgen, Corellian Prime Minister, in private discussion. Galactic Alliance XJ-7, in neutral space between Corellia and Coruscant.
Mara wondered if she'd bothered to spin Jason a line about why she needed to take an XJ-7.
Look, Jason, it's like this. You've turned into a thug since Lumia came on the scene, and the witch is trying to kill my son, so how's about I do what I do best and kill her for all our sakes?
She would have loved to tell him that, but she still didn't know who Lumia's accomplices were inside the GAG, and Jason didn't take kindly to doubts about his precious secret police. He wasn't being helpful. He didn't even seem to believe that Mara and Luke had found convincing evidence of Lumia's GAG connections. Jason might have been a gifted Jedi, but he could also be a very human idiot, too. Or at least she'd thought in those more benign terms before the debacle of Galatter 8. She'd never imagined that Jason would leave his parents to die. Mara tried Leia's comlink again, hopping from frequency to frequency in case she was being tracked. Old habits died hard, and she didn't want Crazy Woman 2, Alima, to get a fix on her, or Leia. Or maybe she did.
"We can't go on meeting like this," said Leia's voice.
She laughed, and that was pretty remarkable under the circumstances. She didn't have much to laugh about.
"Do I have to give you a password?"
"I'll trust you."
Mara checked her cockpit display, watching the frequency shift on the monitor in multicolored bars of light.
"You okay?"
"For a woman on the run, I'm doing great."
"I don't know where to start. Hey, did your son really abandon you to suck vacuum? Because that'd be my first question." "I'm so sorry, Leia. I really am. But I'm going to put a stop to this. Take Lumia out of the equation. And I think you'll see a major improvement in Jason's attitude."
"Is that where you are now?"
"I'm trying to work out how Lumia moves around. Forget all this light whip garbage. I'm going to find her ship and finish what Luke started. They're always vulnerable in transit."
Leia's end of the link went quiet for a few moments.
"Want me to play bait?
Don't you think you've been through enough lately?
I can guarantee that Alima would show up if I asked nicely," Leia said, "and maybe Lumia wouldn't be far behind."
"Tell you what, why don't I lob in Ben and make certain of it?"
"Mara, sorry. I don't want to expose you to any more risk. But if I can devise a safer way of exploiting the fact that neither of those crazies can keep away from us, I'll do it."
"We're going to need to break this link soon," Leia said.
"Okay. Look, I have to see Jason sooner or later. Do you want me to put it to him straight? Ask him why he ran when you'd come to save him?"
Mara couldn't think of a single thing Jason might say that would sound plausible, but she didn't want to make Leia feel any worse than she did.
"My fault, anyway. I defended him when Luke was telling me he was going dark. If I'd seen what was in front of me and acted then, things might be different now."
She had that thought about Palpatine, too. She was spending too much time looking back, and not enough getting on with the here and now. The past couldn't be changed, just the future.
"What if he tells you?" said Leia. "And it's a reason I won't enjoy hearing."
"Your call.
How much worse has it got to get? before you accept he's treating you worse than dirt.
Mara tried to imagine how she'd feel if Ben issued a warrant for her arrest or left her on a space station venting atmosphere. It would devastate her, but she'd take him back in a heartbeat. No, there was no advice she could give Leia about her wayward son.
But I want to know anyway, seeing as Luke and I were there to help him too and wasted our time. All I can say is do whatever you feel you must to get Lumia. Then we'll see about bringing Jason back into the fold. If I find Alima, I'll save her for you. I'd like that. Thought you might. You take care, Mara.
Leia's link went dead. Mara had to assume she and Han were on Corellia, and that meant Alima couldn't get at her so easily.
Take care? Oh, I will. I've got one advantage you haven't, Leia, and that's darkness. I've been that dark. I was trained by a Sith Lord. I can think like them.
At least Leia hadn't made any cracks about Luke not taking the opportunity to finish off Lumia. Sometimes, when she considered her sister-in-law, Mara regretted her own temper and wished she could learn a little of that steely diplomacy. Mara turned the XJ-7 and checked Ben's transponder again.
Still on Coruscant.
That didn't guarantee his safety, but at least she could pinpoint him. She zoomed her screen in on the trace, and the coordinates resolved into a grid, and then into neighborhoods and sky lanes. Ben was at GAGHQ. She could locate him accurately to within 3 meters. He liked the vibroblade she'd given him. She felt bad not telling him it housed a long-range passive transponder, and that it had saved her more than once because she'd used it as a homing beacon. But that was just detail. It was a superb weapon, so it wasn't a lie. The tagged vibroblade ensured she knew exactly where Ben was at all times now. He'd never spot it. The GAG thought they had all the best kit, but she had a few devices that could get past them, using older technology, frequencies, and relays they'd never spot. A surveillance system using the most sophisticated technology wasn't looking for devices almost as basic as a code flashed with a piece of broken mirror. Tech could be blind. If they scanned Ben, they'd only find his comlink code, not the signal hiding within it, because they didn't have the active end of the transponder link. She did. She had one more transponder left, and she was saving that for a rainy day.
Sorry, sweetheart. Had to do it.
She turned her attention back to Lumia. Now Lumia was showing up at confrontations with the Confederation. Perhaps everyone was looking in the wrong direction, and Lumia was working for Corellia. The last time she'd seen her on the resort satellite, Ben wasn't even around. But Jason was. Who was Lumia going after, Ben or Jason? If Lumia's presence was making Jason forget what being a Jedi was all about, then maybe Mara needed to keep tabs on Jason, too. That was easier said than done. She needed to try a more direct approach there. Maybe talk to him for once. Nobody else had managed to. It was hard to get Jason to listen, and even harder to get hold of him these days. He took the secret in secret police literally. Then something vanished from the Force.
Ben.
It was like a shape flashing past her peripheral vision, and a familiar background noise stopping abruptly, leaving a dead, soundless ringing in the ears.
Ben's gone.
Ben had disappeared from the Force. Mara's hand was on the controls to jump to hyperspace and head back to Coruscant at top speed, when the sense of her son flooded back, as if the sound had been turned on again. Her stomach rolled.
Maybe it's me.
He'd done it before as a little boy, scared by the last war, the one against the Yuuzhan Vong. It was uncontrolled and instinctive. But what Mara had just experienced felt like something more deliberate. When she concentrated on him, he felt fine. No, more than fine. He felt elated. It still bothered her. She set a course for home, and before she jumped, she felt him vanish and return again. He seemed delighted. She could feel the profound wonder in him. So he was doing it deliberately. No son of hers was going to pull that stunt on her. She'd had enough of Jason doing it without Ben learning to hide in the force as well. She'd go back and check on him, but pick her time to confront him about his new skill. Maybe he won't get any farther than short bursts. But he was Ben, and Ben had proved capable of astounding feats. He'd master it, all right. She just knew it. Suddenly, she didn't feel quite so guilty about giving him a tagged vibroblade. A mother had to keep ahead of the game somehow. Southside Landing Strip, Kuat City. So, said the clone. He hauled Myrta to her feet and dusted her down. And she tolerated it. His animal watched her with red-rimmed yellow eyes, and she grabbed her helmet from where he'd dropped it, expecting the creature to spring at her. What part of stay out of my way didn't you understand? Myrta opened her mouth to give him a piece of her mind, but Fett cut in.
Nice of you to drop in, but can we continue this discussion elsewhere?
Ah, the almighty Mandalore. Hanging a gang boss over a balcony in the center of town. Yeah, that's subtle.
The clone motioned the animal into the cargo bay, where it lay rumbling ominously like a distant storm. It was the ugliest thing Myrta had ever seen. Loose gold fur that made it look like its skin was several sizes too big for it, six legs, and a truly ghastly mouthful of fangs.
Thanks for getting everyone's attention.
I was looking for you, Fett said.
He closed the hatch.
We have to go. Shut up and secure yourself for takeoff.
You abducting me?
Would you rather have a chat and a cup of caff while we wait for the Kuat police and all of Frigg's scumbags to show up?
Okay. I borrowed the speeder anyway. Sort of. Tell you what, drop us off on Coruscant, and we'll be on our way.
The clone grabbed his helmet with both hands and lifted it off. He didn't look any less intimidating, but after a couple of seconds he broke into an unexpected grin that completely transformed him. He looked more like Fett's brother than his twin, not identical at all.
They say there's some family resemblance, but I don't see it myself.
Fett paused for a telling moment, and then stalked off to the cockpit. Myrta wasn't certain whether to land a punch on the clone or thank him for showing up.
What's your name? She asked.
Jang Skirata. You?
Myrta Gev.
Then she realized it didn't have the required impact.
Fett's granddaughter.
Jang raised his eyebrows and burst out laughing. The animal lifted its head and whined. Myrta went forward to the cockpit to strap herself in for takeoff, unhappy at the laughter still ringing behind her.
You let him ambush you,
said Fett. Myrta seethed.
I didn't pick him up on my sensors, and I didn't even see him coming at me. He flattened me before I could kalik him.
Stab.
You're learning.
And you're not.
Fett punched the controls, and Kuat dwindled to a disk beneath them.
You didn't check visually. Don't rely on the helmet tech all the time.
Hey, you didn't spot him either. That's got to be stealth armor.
He's a null,
There was some history there. She could see that.
They were Black Ops clones. The Kaminoans attempt to improve on my dad's genome for cloning. You can see it didn't work.
He says his name's Jang. And did they really shove your head down? Fett just turned his head. He still had his helmet on. And even though few things scared Myrta these days, he had a way of being glacially slow and silent that was unsettling. She was just trying to get him to talk, looking for the long-buried man within. It was a forlorn hope. She gripped the console in front of her as Fett tapped in the coordinates for Coruscant. 000, and Slave One jumped to hyperspace.
"Jang's not as bad as I thought," Myrta said.
"They were all psychiatric cases."
Considering he probably hadn't seen them since he was a kid, Fett's recollection seemed painfully vivid.
"They say Jang tracked Grievous in the war. Master assassin, sniper, general pain in the backside. Don't underestimate him."
"The war before last, you mean?"
"It's all one long war to me."
It was time to shut up, she decided. Fett was braced against the pilot seat, looking uncomfortable. It could be folded down so the pilot could stand at the controls, or raised to form a ledge. He usually opted for the latter. She had a feeling that he was in too much pain to sit down.
"Course laid in," he said. "Let's go talk to him."
Myrta pulled out another painkiller, grabbed his hand, and slapped the capsule into his palm.
"And when we drop him off on Coruscant, you see Dr. Belwine, okay?"
Fett grunted. That was as near as she'd get to an agreement. She could see his dread of mortal weakness.
"I'm not relying completely on drugs yet," he said. "All the time I hurt, I know how far it's progressed."
Jang was sitting cross-legged on the deck of the cargo bay, face to face with the animal, which was gazing into his eyes and making little whining, grumbling sounds as if trying to get him to understand something. He seemed oblivious to its smell. They both looked around when Fett and Myrta came through the hatch.
"What is he?" Myrta asked.
"You asking me, or Lord Myrdalon?"
Jang held his gloved fingers up in front of the animal's face, some kind of signal that produced instant attention and made it lie flat on the deck. Jang got to his feet.
"He's an it. Strills are hermaphrodites. I promised Myrd's last owner I'd look after it when he passed to the Manda. Strills live a lot longer than we do."
"Heard of them, but never seen one."
"They're nearly extinct on Mandalore. Myrd, well, you might say it's a Black Ops Strill. Saw a lot of commando action in a few wars."
Fett shoved his thumbs into his belt in that I'm fed up with waiting pose.
"When you two finish the nature lesson..."
Jang had more lines, fewer gray hairs, and a heavier build than Fett. Myrta could see the cords of muscle in his neck, and he had no scars. He looked like a man who'd spent a lot of time in the sun without a helmet, and who'd laughed a lot. Genetically, this was Fett, but they couldn't have been more different.
"Ain't I gorgeous?"
He grinned, and she realized she was staring at him.
"A vision,"
Fett said sourly, and removed his helmet.
"I think I aged better, Bobica." "It's the fact that you reached this age at all that interests me." "So why do you want me? Need a loan? You've been looking for me for weeks, 'cause I've been hearing all kinds of people putting out the word for me,
I'm dying, Fett said. Jang chewed over the news, head slightly to one side.
Sorry to hear that. You're not the only clone who met a premature end.
Fett usually cut to the chase. Now he stood silent for a while, jaw muscles twitching. Myrta wondered if he was hurt by the rebuff. She guessed that he was working up to the hardest thing he ever had to say. He was.
I want your help, Jang.
Jang just stared at him. The staring went on for a long time. Myrta wondered who would give in first. Then it went on a little too long.
Oh, for Fearfex's sake, she sighed. It's the cloning. His tissues are breaking down, and he's got tumors. He needs to know what stopped you aging at double the rate, because his doctor can't help him, and neither can the Kaminoans, not even Town Wee.
Fett pursed his lips slightly.
What she said.
So Town Wee's still going strong, too, the old Iowa bait. Well, well.
Jang looked Fett up and down.
You had trouble with your leg, I heard. Had to have a transplant, yes?
You're very well informed.
I'm still a Tippica boy at heart. I stay in touch with events in the old country.
What have I got to pay you to quit gloating and give me what I need?
No offense, but you can shove your credits where your armor don't reach, Mandalore.
You don't know what I need yet.
I can guess.
Kosai's research.
Fett gave Jang's gloves a pointed glance.
Because I know you found it. You certainly found her.
You get more with honey than with sour sap, Boba. Didn't getting your head shoved down the freshers teach you anything?
Fett had no idea how to ask for help. Myrta wasn't sure if it was some male bravado thing, or just that he'd never learned. But he wasn't getting far with Jang, who seemed equally hard and obstinate.
Can you help him? She said. Gedetye? Mandalore needs him alive. And so do I.
The clone was still staring into Fett's face.
Remember leading an Imperial force against clone troops on Kamino?
Fett nodded, utterly impassive.
Yes.
You didn't feel that we were family then.
Didn't see any of you defending your brothers either.
And you deposed Shisa, you Hutun, the man who put us back on our feet as a people. Where were you when the Empire was bleeding us dry?
Hutun was the worst insult any Mando could throw at another. But Fett didn't seem to notice or care. Myrta found out more about her grandfather's murky past every day. So there was no reason to feel her mother and grandmother had been singled out for his total disregard then. He didn't give a stuff about anyone, except his father, who seemed to have been elevated to an icon of perfection since his death. So Babuir fought against his own brothers. Maybe he hadn't seen the irony. If he had, she suspected he'd made a point of looking the other way.
I'm not proud of anything I've done,
Fett said, no hint of emotion in his voice.
But I'm not ashamed of anything either. I just do what I have to. You don't know what went on between me and Shisa, and maybe you never will.
He was there when we needed him, said Jang, and you weren't. That's all I need to know.
Fett didn't so much as blink.
I take it you won't be handing over Kozai's data, then.
Jang glanced at Myrta, as if he felt sorry for her. She wondered how different her life might have been if Jang had met Sintas Vel instead of Boba Fett.
There isn't any data,
he said at last. He was still looking at her, not Fett.
Sorry, kid.
Fett didn't even blink.
You must have taken all your vitamins, then, because you should be dead by now.
I didn't say the research didn't exist. I'm saying that we destroyed it after we took what we needed.
Fett absorbed that slowly. Myrta's heart sank in that conflicting way it had now. Part of her desperate to find a reason to love her Babuir, and half of her wishing Leia Solo hadn't blocked her shot when she'd tried to kill him.
Do something to make me forgive you. Please. Anything.
You could have made a fortune from it,
Fett said. We didn't want it used again. Ever.
You can't stop cloning. You never will.
No, but we put a dent in the Kaminoans. That's better than nothing. I don't like Kaminoans.
I can tell.
Fett glanced at Jang's fine gray gloves.
But I've worked for worse.
They paid you. They bred us like animals.
Jang looked as if he'd remembered something satisfying.
So Town Wee's still alive. I always wondered.
Leave her alone, Jang. She's old now.
So am I, no thanks to her. So how long have you got to live?
A year. Maybe two if my luck holds.
How long before you have to hand over command?
I don't know.
The last thing Mandalore needs at the moment is a power vacuum.
Myrta saw a glimmer of hope.
So help him, Jang.
Best I can do is a blood sample, he said. But I think you'll hand it over to the Kaminoans, Boba, or your doctors will, and we really wouldn't be very happy about that. Not at all.
We?
Myrta felt she was getting on better with Jang. She'd use her advantage as the harmless, tragic granddaughter. If Jang wouldn't cooperate, she might find one of his brothers who would.
How many of you are there left?
You don't need to know that. Look, I've got grandchildren too, Boba, and great-grandchildren. I've got family on Mandalore. So I care what happens when you're gone.
As soon as he said it, it took on a terrible reality for her, and she wondered if it had the same impact on her grandfather.
The great Boba Fett's on the way out.
Much as it pains me, your Buad here is right. Mandalore needs you for the foreseeable future.
Fett made a very good job of looking bored. Maybe he was. Myrta doubted it. He was negotiating for his life, and if Fett was anything, he was a survivor. He didn't know how to die gracefully like everyone else.
So I get the blood if I keep the Kaminoans out of it?
Not that simple, said Jang.
It never is.
You give me blood and tissue samples, and I'll get something made up for you, if I can.
And I'm supposed to trust you.
As much as I'm supposed to trust you. And don't even think about taking a sample from me the hard way.
Okay.
Fett's jaw twitched again.
thank you.
He made it sound like a foreign language, awkward and unfamiliar in his mouth. Myrta resisted the urge to react.
Well done, Babuir. Was that so hard?
Jang wasn't done, though.
There's a condition, of course.
There always is.
Fett crossed his arms.
What? Get your Shebs back to Mandalore. Listen to Kadika's advice and build a strong, united, stable state. Prove you're even half the man that Jaster Mareel and Fen Shisa were. All you want to do is emulate your old man, Boba. But you're too scared to exceed him, aren't you? You can't be better than Jango. That would never do.
Myrta flinched. Mentioning his father without due reverence seemed to be the one thing that really got Fett riled. His voice didn't change, but he unfolded his arms with slow care.
My father, said Fett, finally destroyed the Death Watch. That's his legacy to Mandalore. Sectarian feud, irrelevant to most Mondoades' lives. Now, are you going to give me a sample? What kind of scientists have you got access to that I haven't?
Some things, Jang said softly, can't be bought. I have my resources, believe me. Got a med pack with a sharp in it?
Yes.
Draw some blood, then.
I'll do it, said Myrta.
With Fett, it wasn't a case of simply rolling up sleeves. He had so much equipment on his forearms that Jang ended up holding the flamethrower attachment, whip assembly, and assorted projectiles. Fett was an armory on legs. Myrta didn't expect him to flinch when she finally found a vein, and he didn't. The few moments while she applied pressure to the blood vessel with her thumb to stop the bleeding afterward were the longest of her life, because he wouldn't meet her eyes, and it reminded her that she could touch him and still not reach him. Jang held the vial of red-black blood up to the light and admired it.
That'll do nicely. Give him some candy for being a brave boy, Myrta.
What now?
Fett asked, unmoved.
You drop me off, and I'll let you know what we get.
How?
I'll deliver it personally to Keldabe.
Better make it snappy, then, or you might be in time for my funeral.
Oh, I'll be back, and so will plenty of other Mondoade. You asked us, remember? You asked us to come home.
He turned to Myrta.
When the old Chakar dies and they divvy up his armor, make sure you get the flamethrower, because his plates are Duse, not even proper Beskar.
So Jang wasn't out of touch with events on Mandalore, and he thought Fett's Durasteel armor was garbage. The Strill padded closer to Jang and yawned extravagantly with an expression that said it was totally underwhelmed by the discussion. Myrta could smell its breath, which, oddly, wasn't unpleasant at all.
"How does that thing hunt if it's got such a strong scent?"
Fett asked. Jang bent and ruffled Myrd's neckfolds.
Only humanoids can smell it. And don't be too hard on Myrta for getting ambushed, Bobica. Few people can deal with a full-grown Strill swooping down on them. These things fly, you know.
I don't keep pets.
Fett seemed on the edge of a concession.
If you want something to eat, the galley's through that hatch.
Jang opened a pouch on his belt and took out something dried and dark that looked like leather straps. He threw a strip to Mird and chewed on one himself.
We're fine, thanks.
It took a few seconds for Myrta to work out what was going on.
He doesn't want to leave any DNA. He's even more cunning than you, Babuir.
Fett turned and swung back through the hatch. Myrta had hoped the two men would find something else to talk about, but the fact they shared a genome clearly meant nothing. Still, this was a relative. This was her relative, a great-uncle, even if Mandos didn't care about bloodline half as much as most species. The Kifar half of her cared about it a lot.
I feel bad for you, kid, Jang said. I feel bad for him too, I suppose. But apart from some admiration for his skills, I think he's the worst excuse for a Mondo Odd this side of the core. On the other hand, he wins, and we need winners. And my dad would have expected me to help him, no questions asked.
Jang spoke as if he came from a totally different family, not a vat that contained the duplicated chromosomes of Jango Fett. He slipped a three-sided knife from his forearm plate and trimmed the dried meat into smaller chunks, utterly at ease.
Jango's not who you mean by dad, is he? Myrta said.
No.
Jang smiled wistfully to himself for a moment.
Genes don't count. You ought to know that by now. The man who adopted me was my training sergeant, finest man who ever lived.
Jang sounded like he'd come from a far happier family. A strange thing for a clone soldier.
I seem to be bucking the trend of devoted kids, Myrta said. I tried to kill my grandfather.
So did your mother, I hear. Boba's obviously got this magic touch with the ladies.
You seem to know everything about me, but I don't know much about you.
Jang just grinned.
That's my job, sweetheart.
So why did you get involved with Cherit's gang over the Twi'leks?
Another promise I made a long time ago.
He chewed, looking slightly past her in recollection.
I tend to keep them.
He went on chewing, occasionally throwing chunks to Mird. And that was it. Silence descended. She thought he might talk about his family on Mandalore, all the undiscovered relatives she now found she had, but he didn't. Myrta realized she wasn't going to get anything more out of him, and she didn't want to look needy. She returned to the cockpit, settled into the co-pilot seat, and clutched the Heart of Fire against her chest plate. Even if it told her nothing, it was still a connection to her mother and grandmother.
"You fed up with him already?"
Fett asked. She wanted to think Jang had given Fett some hope and raised his spirits, but it was hard to tell.
"Is your armor really rubbish? Why don't you use proper Mandalorian iron? Like Bevine says..."
"Don't push your luck. I let you stick a needle in me. That's your fun for the day."
It had cheered him up. Myrta could tell. She hoped that not only would Jang's unspecified resources come through, but that Boba Fett would redeem himself so that her only kin wasn't someone that she wished were someone else. GAGHQ, Coruscant. Jason didn't want to look too interested in the Policy and Resources Council proceedings. If he showed up for the meeting and sat in the gallery reserved for those hardy citizens who actually cared about the minutiae of government, he might cause questions to be asked. On the other hand, he might just have been seen as a micromanaging, interfering colonel who put his troops' welfare above schools, health, and transport. That was fine by him. He did. But a low profile was called for, so he stayed at GAGHQ and switched to the HoloNet channel that broadcast Senate proceedings. Lumia should have been there by now. He waited for the holocam to pan to the public gallery and saw, as he expected, a woman in a sober business suit and veiled headdress. She wasn't the only one, either. Veils were considered very chic this year. She drew no attention at all. HM3's amendment to the procurement regulations was item 357 on an agenda of 563 mind-bogglingly boring tweaks and changes to laws Jason didn't even know were on the statute books. I'm going to have to do a lot of delegating when I'm in charge. A hand-picked team of administrators. Led by HM3, I think. The session had already started, and senators who were happy to do the small routine work and not be noticed were on item 24, having a particularly arcane piece of hazardous waste legislation explained to them. Jason turned off the audio feed and set the monitor to alert him when item 357 was up. Then he got on with reading more intelligence reports, with the doors to his office wide open. He almost always kept the doors open. It reassured the troops. It told them that he was an accessible officer, always willing to listen. But Jory LeCouf peered in, boots still firmly on the corridor side of the doors, as if there were a barrier marked Officer Territory, Do Not Pass. "Lady at the security gate asking to see you, sir." Jason, distracted, felt in the force to see who it might be. "Mara Skywalker." LeCouf grinned. "It's great the way you can do that, sir." "I don't get many women coming to see me, so I could have guessed." Jaina wouldn't be visiting, not without him feeling her resentment and mistrust marching ahead of her like a vanguard. And it wouldn't have been Tenel Ka. He missed her. And he missed Alana even more. "I don't have to kill them. I'd know if I had to, wouldn't I?" "Bring her in." "Yes, sir." LeCouf turned to go. "LeCouf, sir?" "Have you ever considered a commission?" "Not sure if I'm officer material, sir." "I think you could be. I'm not forcing you. But we need good officers coming through the ranks, because we'll have a challenging role in the years to come." LeCouf seemed dubious. "I'm willing to give it a go, sir." "Excellent. I'll get the adjutant to fix the paperwork. We'll probably have to delay staff college until the security situation is more stable, but I'm sure Chevu or Gearden will be happy to guide you. And you'll be able to keep an eye on Ben. He really trusts you." LeCouf blinked, but there was no expression on his face. "Captain Chevu looks after me very well. I'll learn a lot from him." Non sequiturs said a lot. LeCouf wasn't naive, for all his cheerful schoolboy appearance. His careful avoidance of Captain Gearden's name confirmed Jason's observations that the ex-intel man wasn't a popular officer with troops from the military and CSF side. Spies had that effect. Chevu had come from the CSF, familiar, visible, reliable folks you were happy to see in a crisis. Jason couldn't afford divisions. "You might do Captain Gearden good, too. It's interesting how a good apprentice creates a better teacher." Thank you, sir. LeCauf showed not a flicker of reaction. I'll show your guest in.
Jason kept one eye on the silent holoscreen while he looked through the reports, one of which he forwarded for Neothel's immediate attention. The Bothans had a new class of frigate coming into service in a matter of days. The P&R meeting had reached item 102. A busy day. A lot of rubber stamping was going on. He opened his comlink and switched the signal to the small bead deep in his ear. Lumia had a concealed receiver in her cybernetic implants and would hear it in the depths of her skull, silent as a thought. He used her cover name, the one he'd used in front of Ben. It was common enough. It also helped avoid accidental slips.
Are you helping them make decisions, Shira?
Giving them a sense of urgency, that's all. Not that they don't have fancy lunches on their minds anyway.
Does it look as if anyone troublesome has read the agenda sheets in advance?
Not as far as I can see. But don't worry. I can deal with that.
Jason felt Mara approaching down the corridor, a little tornado of determination. Unlike LeCauf, she walked straight in. Jason projected a veneer of weary good humor in the Force and smiled at her. She glanced at the holoscreen.
That looks thrilling.
Just making sure we get our supply issues worked out.
Hiding in plain sight was always the best option, Jason found.
An amendment so that we can cut the red tape and get our people the right kit. It's been an issue with the troops.
I'm all for that.
Mara sat down in the rickety chair across from his desk. Jason believed in being seen not to spend budget on himself, and crossed her legs. She'd taken to wearing a gray jacket that looked more like battle dress, an indication of her state of mind lately.
I've come about Ben.
He's doing well. He's doing very well, in fact.
You've certainly focused him. Quite the responsible young man now.
Mara glanced at the open doors as if they troubled her.
Let's get to the point. I know Lumia's trying to kill him. Whatever he did or didn't do, Lumia thinks he killed her daughter. Now, seeing as we also found evidence that Lumia has a mole in the GAG, that concerns me somewhat. A lot of somewhat. If anything happened to my boy from inside the GAG, I'd take it pretty badly, I think.
Ah. Has she worked it out? Has Mara actually seen what's coming?
Jason felt a moment of sinking dismay as he wondered if this last mystery about his path was transparent to everyone.
She was Palpatine's hand. If anyone on the Jedi Council can see it, she will.
Jason managed to project genuine concern. His link was still open. Lumia could hear all this.
I've investigated that, and I can assure you I found nothing to support it.
Is Ben around? I don't see much of him these days.
Ben was out on patrol, on routine weapons searches. Mara didn't need to know that.
He's doing some research for me.
Okay, Mara said. Just asking you to bear in mind that it's not the Confederation that's most likely to threaten his life. And even if you don't think Lumia has an insider in your ranks, then I'm assuming she has, until I'm convinced otherwise.
She stood up slowly, and Jason was on the edge of believing that she could see what was happening.
Just ask yourself which member of the GAG would ally with Lumia. I'm not sure you'd see it, being so close to it.
Jason expected to hear some sigh or other reaction from Lumia, but either she was more concerned with the passage of the amendment, or she couldn't hear after all.
I'll certainly ask that question, Aunt Mara, he said. Just bear in mind that Ben's learning to take care of himself.
And are you?
What do you mean?
Well, if nobody else is going to say it to your face, I will. What's happening to you, Jason? Why did you run out on your parents like that? Okay, there's a warrant out on them, but...
Jason wondered why it had taken so long for anyone to confront him. He'd expected Jaina to be the first, given her perpetual sulk with him. But Mara probably felt her defense of him had now made her look stupid.
My fault, he said. I assumed they were okay and could get to safety, so I decided to get to where I could make a difference to the battle. My ship.
Right, said Mara. Just a lapse in judgment.
I'm human.
We all have times when our judgment lets us down. I certainly do.
Mara gave him an unconvincing smile, turning for the doors.
Thanks for your time.
She knows. She knows because it's inevitable. And that proves it has to be Ben. It wasn't his parents, or Tenel Ka, or Alana. It was Ben. He wondered how long he could go on facing the boy knowing that. How would it happen? Would he have to kill him in cold blood? Or would they end up in some violent confrontation where death was so much easier to deal out? Lumia's voice was a breath in his ear. If anyone overheard her, she sounded like any bureaucrat having a discreet comlink conversation. Not a Sith planning the greatest coup of all time.
I think my former colleague will be looking for me now, with maximum disapproval.
Jason closed the doors with his remote control.
It was you who engineered the attack on Ben on Zeost, wasn't it?
He'll never be your successor. He hasn't got what it takes to be your apprentice. It's my duty to retire the unsuitable.
Stay away from him from now on. You've gone too far, and I think Mara suspects what's happening.
My former colleague can't touch you if... Wait... They're taking your amendment out of sequence. Someone has asked to speak on it.
Who?
Someone in the public gallery. They've invoked the right to address the council, and they've identified themselves as Citizen Watch.
It was interesting to note how fast things could come unraveled. The civil rights lobby was largely drowned out by events, but he still didn't want them to point out what nobody seemed to have spotted hidden in his amendment.
You know what you have to do.
Indeed.
Lumia went very quiet, her voice almost inaudible.
I think that they're going to decide that they wish to ask if this is going to be retroactive legislation. Yes, they have. How vigilant.
If she thought she'd redeemed herself in his eyes, she was wrong. She was becoming a risk. But that was always the Sith way. Always this struggle between two. He turned the audio back on while the amendment was discussed. HM3 was right. Senators chewed over the sums involved and satisfied themselves that the budget wouldn't be exceeded without authorization from the Treasury. Nobody seemed to see that the finely tuned wording by HM3 would enable Jason to change other legislation, too. He'd think of things that needed changing.
Once I kill Ben Skywalker, Once Mara and Luke find out that it's me, and that day will have to come. Then they'll hunt me down. I'll bring down the whole Jedi Order on my head.
Who would be his apprentice then?
It'll finish the Jedi.
He just wanted things to become clear when the time came. He had to trust his destiny. He was too far along the path to stop now.
Item 357 carried. Next item. Variance of regulations regarding the licensing of air taxis.
And that was it. The amendment had been passed, and when the revised statute came into effect at midnight, Colonel Jacen Solo and Admiral Cha Nyathel, because it applied equally to her, would be able to order whatever the defense forces needed and get it fast.
And change any other administrative legislation within existing budgets without recourse to the Senate.
They'd handed him an extraordinary power, and one that he'd use to change the way the galaxy was governed. He'd use it to take down Chief of State Omis. He wasn't sure of the details yet, but he could do it, and soon. The Galactic Alliance would fall. Not with a clash of lightsaber blades, or ion cannons fired, or troops surrounding the Senate, but with a sheet of flimsy and a nod of heads.
"Well done," he said softly. "Nicely influenced."
"Not me,"
Lumia said. He could hear the smile in her voice.
"They reached the decision themselves without any help from me. I just redirected a little opposition from the gallery."
The irony was too delicious sometimes. Jacen didn't know whether to be satisfied at the outcome or angry that senators were so stupid that they let him get away with this. They deserved to be ruled by the Sith. They needed to be.